Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and I'm here in the studio with Stephen Thompson of NPR Music. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Well, Stephen and I are here to introduce to you a conversation that we think you're going to be excited to hear. We like this show, Stephen, right?
We do. We've actually talked about Mr. Robot recently on Pop Culture Happy Hour, and we've got a little piece of bonus content that we think will flesh that out nicely.
That's right. We thought it would be fun to get a little extra content, especially without any extra work.
That's
fortunately,
right.
Someone did it for us. Our friend Ari Shapiro of All Things Considered sat down with Mr. Robot creator Sam Ismail. They had a conversation about a whole bunch of different stuff. We thought that you would be eager to hear it, and we are eager to play it for you. So enjoy.
You had firsthand experience with hacker culture before you got into television. Tell us about it.
My poor attempt at hacking was limited to this really ill-advised decision to hack my girlfriend's college campus and send out an email on some stupid, you know, dumb, angsty rant. And I easily got busted because I did it from the job at this computer lab that I was working at NYU. They traced it back to that IP address, and I got fired and put on academic probation. And that was the end of my hacker days.
But aside from the basic teen angst that drew you to that, what was it about the hacker culture, the ethos, the kind of dissatisfaction that stuck in your head for all those years that you would come back to it now?
Well, the thing about angst is it's obviously there's a lot of negative connotation to it, but I also think there's another side to it. And that other side is being able to channel that anger for good. And then, honestly, the Arab Spring, I'm Egyptian, so when I went to Egypt, I'd visited around the time, maybe a few months after the revolution sort of went down there, and I was talking to my cousins who were young and who were a part of it, and they used technology and, you know, to sort of make this happen and use social media, and they were really angry, and that's how that whole thing started. And they I just thought, oh, that's a good use of anger. It's actually necessary in a way to really kind of cause change in your society if you're dissatisfied or disgruntled about it. There's that duality to it that where obviously I think angst could go really awry and can get really self-loathing and self-indulgent. And then there's the flip side where it is actually sometimes necessary to fuel things like a revolution or a change in your society.
When the revolution was happening in Egypt, there was so much optimism and hope among the young people who were driving it, in
right.
many cases through technology. And when you look at the state of Egypt today, it's hard to feel a lot of optimism or hope. So you're saying this is a good way to use the angst, a good way to use the technology. As the show makes very clear, this concept of good and bad is not really clear.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, in a lot of ways, the gray morality of all of this keeps coming up. And, you know, if you think about the American Revolution or any revolution, you know, throughout history, we kind of look at it with a 20/20 hindsight. Well, the good guys won, you know, America won. Obviously, that was great. But there's a lot of good and bad mixed in there that you can't really, it's not so black and white. And we do have the benefit of hindsight. But during that time, there were a lot of different viewpoints that could have challenged what we think is good and bad today. So for me, it's never clear cut. And I think that's kind of what we're exploring, especially in the second season. I mean, maybe in the first season, this sort of idealistic notion of deleting the debt and bringing down this evil corporation. Well, what are the ramifications of that? Is that such a clear cut victory? Was there any victory to be had? Was everybody just losing? Those are sort of the, you know, questions we try and tackle, that sort of gray in between area.
I need to ask your friends in Egypt who were involved in the uprising, who were using technology to try to change their society for the better, were any of them locked up? Were any of them
No,
punished?
Thankfully, no. None of my family members were locked up. But, you know, a lot of them were fearing for their lives, and a lot of the parents especially were not wanting their kids to go to Tahrir Square, for example, and continued to protest. But thankfully, everybody was safe.
And so when you see, whether it is protesters in Egypt or a hacking collective like Anonymous or a website like WikiLeaks that has, you know, tremendous unchecked power, do you think, yes, there's finally an antidote to the power of governments and corporations? Or do you think, this is really scary, they can do things without anybody controlling the extent to how far they go?
Well, I think it's both. And this goes back to that gray area that we were talking about. You know, for example, I think a surveillance state is perhaps one of the most dangerous things that could actually happen today, and especially with the technology that we have today. And privacy is going to be, like, in my opinion, one of the sort of forefront issues that we're going to have to face in the next decade. So hackers kind of poke holes into that system, try and expose those systems, but at the same time, they're at the same time doing it. They're also having that power to also surveil and spy on people. And so it's always that double-edged sword. And it's unfortunately, we have to figure out a way to regulate both sides. We have to figure out a way to, you know, to keep our privacy from the government and from the hackers. And it's always going to be a constant evolutionary thing. The thing that's important, though, in my opinion, is that we keep having a conversation about it. I think at this point, it feels, again, not very much in the public conversation because it's technology, because it can get heady. And for me, it's really important to bring those issues up, which is somewhat what I'm trying to do in the show.
Your main character, Elliot, is possibly more skeptical about big corporations than anyone else. And he is also a totally unreliable narrator who is kind of unstable. And I wonder if you're telling us that if we're afraid of the power of corporations as Elliot is, well, then we're probably paranoid and crazy like Elliot is.
I'm not saying that. I mean, the thing about it is that Elliot is a very specific character that I have witnessed and I've read about among hacker culture, and I think he's a very extreme example.
When you say a specific kind of character that you've witnessed and read about, just sketch what that character is.
Someone who is incredibly distrustful of the world, of government, of corporations, to a sort of mentally ill extent, and is completely self-absorbed and narcissistic about it. I mean, think about the attitude of someone who thinks that there are all these resources dedicated to spying on them and their personal lives. There's a little bit of narcissism in there. There's a lot of angst, and there's a lot of self-loathing. I mean, obviously, I'm not attributing all those qualities to the public.
And yet he's not wrong. I mean, he is being spied on, and there is enormous power in the corporations that he's fighting.
And there is. And so, obviously, we're going to extremes to tell our story and to dramatize our story vis-a-vis through Elliot and sort of his instability along with that. But that's the thing that makes him an interesting character, in my opinion. He's sometimes hard to root for, but the one thing that I think gives him that human side is the Rami Malek side of it all.
He's the actor who plays Elliot, yeah.
Exactly, is the vulnerability, is underneath all of that angst, underneath all of that paranoia, is loneliness, is pain, and that's really the root of all of that.
His character has a sort of Robin Hood quality where, you know, he steals data from drug dealers or cheaters or child pornographers, and it's seductive, but he doesn't have this power because he's necessarily earned it. He just happens to have a certain set of technological skills, and I'm not sure how to feel about that, that anyone with the ability to hack can carry out their own sort of vigilante justice.
Right. And that again goes back to the narcissism. And if you think about it, just the sort of psychology of a superhero is there's that sort of attitude of I should protect people and I should put the bad guys away and I should defend society, but it's you're forming your own justice. There's no judge and jury here. You are it. The choice to be that, the choice to make that catch-all, that in and of itself is a very complicated way of looking at morality. So yeah, Elliot is in that middle weird gray zone. I mean, on the one hand, he's busting a pedophile, but on the other hand, he's invading someone's privacy and, you know, through illegal means.
Do you think of this as a kind of superhero show, the Avengers?
It's weird because I always think hacking is a little bit of a superpower. I mean, you can see through everyone's personal lives, and that's all sort of a construct of modern society. I mean, back in the day, all your personal information was not necessarily online, you know, and then, you know, over 20 years ago, that there was no online. So the fact that you can manipulate people because you can hack them and basically learn everything about their personal lives and all their dirty secrets, I mean, that is an immense amount of power. And so in a certain way, it is kind of a superpower.
It's funny, as I go down this road of thinking of the hacker as the superhero, I'm thinking, well, social outcast, check. Alternate identity in the digital space, check.
Dead father.
Dead father, check.
Yeah, check.
Yeah.
Evil nemesis. Yeah, exactly.
I want to ask you about one of the more minor characters in the show named Trenton. And this shouldn't be a big deal in 2016, and yet I can barely think of another American TV show that has a character who wears a headscarf, who is Muslim, whose plot line is in no way connected with terrorism, counterterrorism, Islamist extremism. That just seems to be the default for characters wearing headscarves on television in the United States, and it's not the case in your show.
Yeah, and you know, it's not the case, I would hope, with any of our characters. You know, even Rami, who's Egyptian, I don't look at ethnicity or orientation or race or any of that. I don't, or religion. I don't necessarily look at those things as a way to define characters by those characteristics. I just think that helps inform who they are. But I never want that to be the highlight of their storyline. If, you know, our story is our story and Elliot's journey. These are the people in that world. And, you know, honestly, they're reflective of the people in my world. That's the only reason why I kind of build out the world with all the characters that we do have. That's where it comes from, is just sort of reflecting, you know, my own honest experience.
And yet a character wearing a headscarf is a writer and director's choice that is a lot more affirmative, it would seem, than casting somebody like Rami Malek, who may be Egyptian, but on screen, you know, is ethnically ambiguous, and you don't have to write that into the plot, per se.
Right. And that's the thing. Elliot wasn't, you know, I didn't think of him as any one ethnicity. And then, of course, Rami came in and delivered a great performance. He was perfect for the role. And then, you know, once he was in the show, I obviously had to address that in some way. But again, not define him by that.
And Trenton?
Yeah, when I was thinking about the makeup of our hacker collective, I was thinking about the people that would want to join this group, that would want to actually cause this sort of extreme action against this corporation. And so that's where the ethnicities did inform those decisions and how those people came together. And specifically with Trenton, she talks about it in the first season, that, you know, it was sort of motivated by her parents and sort of how the American dream didn't really work out for them when they came to the country. And so that was an important choice to make for her character to be involved with the group.
So having written this show and now directing every episode of season 2, do you feel yourself being more paranoid and changing your passwords and stockpiling food and buying a cabin off the grid in the woods?
No, I'm not. You know, it's interesting. I think a lot of people confuse me with the main character. I'm not in any way, shape, or form like that. I'm very protective of my online life, and I try and take as many security measures, but I think everybody should at this point. But no, I am not like the off-the-grid kind of guy. I'm actually quite normal.
I actually wasn't suggesting in any way that you are Elliot, but just that in exploring the possibilities of what a motivated hacker can do, you think to yourself, I should be a little more paranoid than I am.
I'm definitely paranoid on my online life, but it has not gotten into my system in terms of my just everyday life.
I mean, for example, season 2 features a great scene early on with a fully wired house that basically rebels against its owner. And it made me think, you know, should I have more candles and distilled water on hand than I do?
You know what? I got to tell you something. I love technology and I love gadgets. I buy all the new gadgets when they first come out. So I actually probably am the opposite. I am not so paranoid. You know, when we were shooting that sequence at that house, the house was so amazing and so beautiful. And even as we're shooting, you know, all these little horrific scenes that went on, I was like, oh, I can't wait to get this. Oh, I gotta get this. Oh my God, that's so awesome.
I had the exact opposite reaction.
There you go. I should be more paranoid.
Sam Ismail, it's been great talking with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Ari. This was fun.
Sam Ismail is the creator of Mr. Robot, which is currently in its second season on USA.